I'm your host, Taryn Burke, and you are listening to The Witch's Muse, Stories Beneath the Surface, where initiation and inspiration meet, and we explore the many facets of being human. Our work in the world matters. Let's talk about it. This week, we are talking to Onyi Love, and she is representing the Wheel of Fortune card. A card of change and cycles. It felt supernatural to just connect with Onyi Love and really just what it's like to experience, witness, and be present to a spiritual practice. And that spiritual practice being existence, being living moment to moment, noticing, observing, remembering ourselves and our innate wisdom at the center of our own being. There's so much here, and I want to dive right in. So without further ado, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Witch's Muse and The Wheel of Fortune. Do you have the origin story of that song? What is its kind of story, or what it's here to be shared for our listeners today?
Yeah, and it's a song in the Lukumi or Santeria tradition, which are branches of Ifa, the spiritual tradition, system, practice, way of life, really, that comes from the Yoruba people of West Africa. And it is a song calling to, welcoming, giving honor to the energy or the orisha that is called Elegba, Elegwa, Eshu. And this energy is the beginning and the end, opens and closes the doors, the roads, the gates, crossroads, choice, the trickster. In traditional settings, you begin with Elegba or Eshu, and you end with Elegba and Eshu, asking permission to walk down the road and giving gratitude after having walked through the road. You know, those are kind of the understandings that I have at this point as I continue to learn more and delve more into this tradition, really.
It's amazing to know that there's so many song lines in the way of oracle traditions. And being able to uncover so much meaning out of songs, and so much more for me, the energy of something by hearing it through a song and being sung over. Sometimes reading can be for me really powerful and impactful as someone who does really love both reading and music as just ways of kind of connecting to just information and knowledge and wisdom. So, and with that, I want to welcome everyone to The Witch's Muse, Stories Beneath the Surface, where we explore the many facets of being human. And I am so excited and just grateful to have Onyi Love here as we dive into the Wheel of Fortune. And it's a card that I think in many ways doesn't need as much definition and can be really allowed its own interpretation. As one looks at it, it's a wheel. There's symbolism all throughout it. And really, I think represents the phases and facets of one's journey to either their path, either to a project. You know, you can make it a little bit of a smaller thing over to the what's next in their process. And I'm excited with Onyi and a little bit about them. They're based out of LA, and they're an energy worker, a teacher. They're a student, a singer, a writer, a traveler, a wellness consultant, a healing facilitator, and a lover of life. And all in my kind of experience with Onyi has been, again, through the terrestrial waters of the internet, I like to say. They're both like super shiny and also can be super, you know, it's hard to fully know people fully through the internet. And so for me, windows and glimpses of things like Instagram and other platforms, the reflectiveness of Onyi really, and their ability to ask questions that pose deeper curiosity in life's process is always something that I really enjoy when we allow ourselves the ability to dive deeper into life's questions and really dive really beyond the surface. And that's so much of what this podcast for me is and its creation. So I start out my questions for Onyi always of just what's the soul question that keeps you up at night. And in other ways too, I don't want to think of it of a place of insomnia. And I try to preface it of like, what's a question that you're deeply curious about or something that you're currently tracking kind of in your life and your life's work?
It's interesting because I don't know that there are necessarily any questions that keep me up at night, but more so questions that I consider throughout my day all the time. And I think one of the questions is a self-reflection in the sense of, am I doing enough? Am I doing enough to be who I am, to be a reflection to others of the possibility of what they can be. You know, anytime anything occurs or any circumstance, situation, encounter in relationships, I always self-reflect, you know, what was my part? What did I do? Was I clear enough? You know, how did this person come to what they came to, what was my part in it? And I think it's kind of a double-edged sword for me because on the one hand, I am looking to take responsibility and accountability for my part in things. But then on the other hand, I find myself taking on the responsibility that perhaps is theirs, taking on blame, not seeing their part because I'm so focused on what did I do? How did I do? What could I have done better? So I think that's something that's, it's both a beautiful thing and it's also something that is a challenge for me, just in my interpersonal relationships. But I think on a bigger level, there's this idea of, you know, am I doing enough? What did I come here to do on this earth? Who did I come here to be? And am I doing that? You know, how am I keeping myself from fully stepping into that? What blockages do I have? What heaviness is there that prevents me from being light and the light that I came here to be?
A lot of it for me is my sense to like truly belong in my place and whatever that place is, whether it's my path or my place in the world. So I really love that you're able to reflect, like, is it enough? And it's this interesting, you know, I don't know if it's a proverb, I might not be saying that right, but knowing it's enough to know, which is, you know, just that play on words of just sitting in that. And I really honor just the constant conversation of self-reflection. And I think in a culture or conditioning that we have meant to both like individualize our experience, like we're all individuals and we're unique, but we're also exploring this community collective awakening. There's like this fine dance and line between how we as individuals are like stewarding our experience, i.e. like constantly reflecting and asking questions, and then how in turn it's being supported by, you know, our fate, our ancestral path, like how a lot of it's already been, you know, written in the stars for where we're at, this kind of collective awakening. So I just really would love for you to talk more, especially of the Yorisha and just your spiritual practice and your lineage and the curiosity of those questions, like when you feel like it's asking those questions, like, is it enough? Is there, whether it's a voice, a guide, is there a way that something, someone kind of helps to hold those questions, right? Like creates a container for you to self-reflect, of course, other than yourself, who I think is holding a really sacred and also wise container for your own process.
No, definitely, definitely. And it's interesting, you know, questions about spiritual practice, you know, and this, I recently wrote an article for the volume 6 of Life is Ceremony, where the theme basically was reclaiming our culture, remembering ourselves. And, you know, Alice, the founder of the publication, had reached out to me after seeing a piece or a video that I'd done for my soul sister, Sanyu, who has been a guest on your podcast, but she curates a piece on Instagram called Black Like Monday. And so she asked me to do a piece on ancestral or African traditions and just reflect on my recognition that African traditions and kind of going back, you know, my family background is Nigerian. And I am fortunate to know my direct ancestry. You know, I've done DNA tests as well, but even before doing the DNA tests, I know that my family is of Nigerian background. I'm Yoruba and Igbo. So unlike many other people within the African diaspora who don't have the direct connections, I'm fortunate to do so. And, you know, in my delving into African spirituality, specifically Ifa, and just really noticing that a lot of conversations about spirituality and religion often either exclude traditional African practices or indigenous practices or have very little descriptions about them. But then you can find a plethora of information about other traditions that are maybe not necessarily considered indigenous or African. And so, you know, in this piece, I talked about the exclusion of African traditions for the Black Life Monday curation. And Alice saw this and wanted me to delve deeper into it. And in starting to write about that, I imagined that I would just explore deeper into the idea of the exclusion of African traditions and, you know, how in my path, I'm delving more into that, you know, retracing my spiritual roots. But what ended up happening is really talking about, you know, more of my spiritual practice as a whole, which includes the African traditional practices of Ifa and Orisha, but also just my own recognition that for me, spirituality and my spiritual practice is just my life. How I interact with other people, how I interact with the other creatures, how I experience colors, how I feel and hear sound, how sound and music come from and come through me and resonate with other people. My experience of spirituality and therefore my ability to draw upon various tools to help me ground myself and to explore and to really be guided. I pretty much take and learn from everything, you know, in my prayers on a daily basis. I thank everything. Thank you, Egun, my ancestors. You know, they are me. I come from them. I am an extension of them. I thank the Orisha, who are these energies or deities, but they are nature. I thank the directions. I thank all of the beings in the plant, mineral, animal kingdoms, because they all provide a reflection for me in their being, what they are being, regardless of me. They provide a reflection to me of what is possible and who I am. And so whenever I'm delving into these questions of, am I enough? Am I doing enough? You know, what am I supposed to be? how am I supposed to feel, you know, when I can look to everything around me and see that all is my spiritual practice, is my spirituality as my answer, then it just gives me such a broad and an expansive, I guess, it gives me so much to draw from that, you know, I start to just become more at peace and at ease with settling into myself because the answers are all around me. I just have to look and pay attention. Yeah. I don't know if that answers the question, but
yeah, way it's, and in a way it's like the presencing of yourself and, you know, connecting to things like, the wheel, which we're going to talk a little bit about this conversation around fate, like so much of our lives, you know, can be, and I say are just determined by our trust in the universe, and the universe could be, you know, consciousness, the universe could be, animus. I really like to say, like, one of my spiritual practices just being animus. So allowing to know that the world is living and breathing around me and I'm in conversation with everything in the world, and giving, gratitude to that. And again, with the wheel, noticing that so much of the wheel can be, you know, the cycles that we experience life and the ebbs and flows of how we show up. And I really do think that when one begins to notice that everything has the opportunity or has the possibility to be part of a spiritual practice, I think there's so much right now, you know, I could speak in the present moment and just arriving to, or the momentum around noticing that, you know, sacredness is all around us. It's that there's not a specific, you know, way in which or a right way to have that. There's like an unjust way that I think, you know, we think of things like cultural appropriation or really the not telling or the not sharing of other traditions being, you know, within the representation, as you mentioned before, of just African spiritual practices being kind of shared and offered. And so there's like ways that can feel unjust and inequitable, but really if one can, as you say, and you even mentioned, really, really powerful, but also just really simple, is really done with your own vessel, as you know, you have tools and probably ritual items as well that you use in ritual. But what I'm hearing is honoring the ancestors, taking a moment to honor directions, noticing what you are grateful for. And I think that sense of presencing to me has been a huge part of my practice. It's just simply the noticing and the witnessing. And then that question around enoughness for me shifts from a practice of like could be a little bit of a core wound, because my enoughness comes from the sense of like belonging and sometimes feeling like I don't belong. So there's some deeper layers there, but then shifts into this opportunity for me to know it is enough because there's so much abundance and there's so much in a world. If I'm choosing or allowing or giving myself to notice, you know, the beauty in that world. And I want to connect to, because you spoke, you know, we spoke a little bit about fate, and I keep mentioning it because I just feel like it is a huge part of the Wheel of Fortune, as a card, as when one pulls the Wheel of Fortune, again, it's this idea of like luck, of destiny. And that's always another word that I'm always so curious about, of fortune. And, you know, I think for a lot of us, like I love to think about the fortune in terms of like the richness of life, not necessarily in like terms of money, but just where one sees like good things are afoot, good things are happening. So I'm just so curious, you know, again, your conversation around what fate is, around what destiny means, if you feel like, again, I think we're the authors of our own destiny. And I also feel like a lot of that has been written in a way for us. And it's our ability to steward that. I'm curious. The word fate has just been like in my, as I've said it like maybe 7 or 8 times in the last 5 minutes, it's like the thing that has been swirling in my mind around the Wheel of Fortune. So yeah, just curious of your experience around fate and destiny.
It's interesting because I think growing up, I don't really remember ever considering the ideas of fate and destiny. And it wasn't until I was an adult and learning about, again, Santeria, Lukumi, these traditional practices, and the idea that was such a novelty to me, but that made sense to me, and that really kind of speaks to this idea of, again, what is my part? What is my accountability? Is the idea that we decided it all. You know, there's stories that I've heard in terms of, you know, before we get onto this earth plane, as spirits, as energies, as these non-physical bodies, we are sitting and we're having conversations with God, with our guides, with whomever else is there with us in the spirit realm about what it is that we want to experience in incarnation, in the next incarnation, you know, who our family will be, who our parents will be, who our lovers will be, kind of the general themes that we want to experience, maybe specific things that we feel we need to experience because those specific things will, again, elevate us to whatever level that we are needing to get to. So we make these decisions. So again, we create all of it. Like you said, we're the stewards of our destiny. And in coming into the earth realm, into physical existence, we touch the tree of forgetfulness and we forget that we made all those agreements and that we made all those plans and that our path in this lifetime is to remember it all again. And so really, you know, fate and destiny, like we decided all of it. We created all of it. And I think there's this idea that many people have that's so easy to latch onto, that these things just happen to us beyond our control. Why did this happen to me? Why did this person do this to me? Versus, okay, I attracted this. I co-created this. I made the decision that this was what I wanted to experience. Maybe not in this exact way, perhaps in this exact way, or some semblance of it. And really, why did I create that lesson for myself? You know, why, what did I need to learn that I would not have learned otherwise had I not gone through this specific experience? You know, what is meant to be will be, what has been was supposed to be. The way to navigate our fate and our destiny really is to surrender to it, but it's basically surrendering to ourselves because we chose it all on some level. And it's really that remembering of why we chose it that helps us to really ride that wave with ease and peace, no matter what the chaos is, no matter how painful we decide something is. There's still so much power in knowing, you know what, I chose to experience this pain because I knew it would make me stronger. It would crack me open. It would help me to step further into who and what I came here to be that I decided even before getting here.
The choice we have to kind of to manifest or to create or to, and I love how you even mentioned the ability to, you know, be in the chaos. Like we're the choice of actually being and stirring in the shit and stirring in the uncomfortability because we know, and maybe not in that present moment, but we know on a soul or cellular level that that's what's required or that's the threshold crossing that we're doing to arrive or to come to this next phase, next chapter, next wave. And I want to just really honor that because I think a lot of people think they don't have choice. And I think that systems, of course, have been set in place to restrict more ability to see freedom of choice. And I think I wholeheartedly believe in that. And I think we're living in times like that, which is why from, you know, feeling anchored into communities of people that are doing their work, I'd like to say, like not necessarily even just healing, just they're doing the work. They're putting in that that time and that energy, to notice that for themselves and also to notice it for others that may not be able to notice that, or may not have the opportunity or the privilege or the power. It's just, it feels so important to talk about choice.
No, definitely. And even in these times, I mean, whatever times, again, we live in this dimension that we're living in with everything that we've created collectively as human beings to experience. And even, again, it's kind of looking at it from a perspective that even that is a choice, you know, as for me, my soul decided to incarnate into this experience on this earth plane in this dimension, given the racism, sexism, ideas about beauty, all sorts of thing. Well, I decided to incarnate as a dark-skinned African woman who shaved her head, which is a slap in the face to many systems.
Yeah. How does that feel? And how long have you had, a shaved head?
Actually, I wrote something on Instagram recently that, I will read. The first time I shaved my head was in 2015, and I wore it completely shaved until May this year. It had come to me that, you know, and my old story about my hair and my head was just a lot of ideas in society about beauty, about beauty, about desirability, about wanting to fit into a certain aesthetic, whether I held those beliefs myself or whether they were passed on to me from other people. I just kind of took them for granted or as is. But that was there for me. Also dealing with emotional and psychological things that I think express themselves in kind of the leaving of my hair, the lack of putting the right things in my body nutritionally, not attending to my physical health, again, just led to a lot of things when it came to my hair. And so I made the decision in kind of a moment of angst and other things to cut my hair. And what I wrote in my story recently or my post was, I first shaved 2015, started growing it back in 2018 May, because I decided, well, maybe I haven't given my hair the chance to grow in different circumstances, and I want to see what it'll do. And I did so for about 5 months, and a few days ago came to the recognition that for me, for right now, having a shaved head is what actually is more closely aligned to my power at this time in my life than not having a shaved head. And I needed to go through all the experiences of shaving my head, settling into a shaved head, and dealing with all the demons and the ideas and beliefs that came with that, then growing my hair back again and again in that specific moment, dealing with all the ideas and beliefs of having my hair grow the way that it was growing that didn't really feel balanced for me. And so I wrote, I needed this time to be different. I needed to be different. While shaving my head for the first time in 2015 was necessary, brought so many unexpected and beautiful experiences, and paved the way for much of my growth, it was done during a time of sorrow, despair, and a bit of exasperation. Part reaction to circumstances then that were beyond my control, in part means to shedding years of emotional chaos and trauma. Cutting my hair then wasn't done fully for its own sake, nor from a happy place. This time, after 5 months of growing my hair again, any decision and then action to cut it needed to come from my joy and authentic excitement. It needed to be a ritual free from as much heaviness, bitterness, or any other unnecessary energy as possible. I needed to detach from my old story, all of the explanations, justifications, and victimization it contained, and create a new one from a place of the empowerment, a place that has always been there, but that I didn't always give myself permission to step into. And so with my simple but sweet altar set up in the corner of Miss Tina's station, soft music playing in the salon, and most importantly, serenity and balance, on October 9th, 2018, I surrender to the blade. I've missed being able to feel my head in this way. I love it.
Mm. Oh. It's interesting to notice, like, and I go back just for sake of connecting them, of the ability that you knew when the choice was first made, it wasn't from this, you know, I put in quotations, like, good place. It was, like, from the underworld. And I actually, in a way, love the underworld in a lot of ways, but it was, like, from these depths of the underworld. And then as you notice the relationship to self and what's stirring, it becomes a place of deep joy. And that, to me, is just such the riding of the waves of, like, the human experience, like, from a place that you're noticing all these kind of deconstructing, too, is what I've felt like. And I have such the urge, and I cut off 10 inches of my hair, you know, side note, which is not even close to the same in terms of experience, but just for me to kind of situate from where I'm landing is, and even that in itself is the, and I really love how you mentioned it, is the energetic. There's something that is released or transmuted, or that happens with kind of the shedding of hair, because it ties us so much to things in many ways and takes on a lot. And
yeah, and I mean, again, no need to compare. 10 inches is represents a lot of experience, because think about it, you know. And it's funny because I think a lot of people look at energy and spirit, like spirituality, as this like mystical and ethereal and out there thing, especially when it comes to like the experiences that we have. But it's like, if you really look down at the physiological, molecular, biological, whatever other terms we want to use, aspect of hair, you know, hair grows from your head based on just everything that you've been putting into your body, every experience you've been having in your body, everything that's been going on an emotional, physical, mental level. So, I mean, literally they can take a strand of your hair, look at it under a microscope, and see where and when you experience stress in your life. Like, they can do that with hair. So hair holds all this information. It is an archive, literally, for just everything that you've been experiencing on all levels. So to cut any part of that is a releasing, whether you cut it all the way like I did, or you cut it a little bit, it's a releasing of something. And it's such an interesting ritual to cut the hair, to cut or remove or release or transform anything else that for us just as a collective, or for us individually, is a representation of what we're holding on to that no longer needs to be there, or that no longer is serving us in a way that is necessary for who we are in this present moment.
And thanks for the reminder of the non-comparison. Also so much a thing of the ability to want to reflect and hold space for someone's experience, like wanting to honor that. But also in my own way, it's like a little bit of the self-critic kind of coming in a trickster-like fashion of being like, yeah, but it's not.
It's not enough.
Yeah, it's like, it's not the same. Yeah, so good.
Hey there, Tara with the Witch's Muse. You can support more of our work on Patreon. Beginning at $3, we'll get you exclusive offerings and gifts just for Patreon users. Gifts from recent and past guests, Q&As with me, Ask a Witch Bitch, and magic in the everyday. If you're a little bit more interested in diving deeper, we can offer visualizations and journal reflective questions, as well as new and full moon tarot spreads. We work through dream tending, deep dives in imagery, and soul-centric coaching to help you find some clarity. Patreon.com/thewitchesmuse.
So I'm going to, you know, connect us into some of the work you're doing. And I've been super excited just to notice some of the things you've been up to. And you're about to actually take a trip or pretty soon here.
Yeah, in a few days.
I'm so curious about, pure bioenergy. You know, obviously it's so interesting because it's fun because Sonia and I kind of get down on the word witch vibe of just like, I love words. And so I'm looking at all these words together. I'm like, well, all these words are amazing. And so what does it mean to like conduct and orchestrate pure like bioenergy? Like it feels so like, I'm just like, whoa, it's very like these force fields of like, amazing, amazing things. So I'm curious. Yeah. Please speak on pure bioenergy, how it can relate to, your practice and in what ways and it can inform others, like giving others kind of information and access and, just kind of an example or tools around pure bioenergy.
No, definitely. And I'm, so the trip I'm actually taking is to learn more from my teacher, who actually created this brand of this energy work called pure bioenergy. And really bioenergy is not beholden to any one person or any one culture, any one thing. Bioenergy is just the energy of life. We all have access to it. It's all around us. It's in us. It's through us. It's just there. It's life. And pure bioenergy is a trademark that my teacher, Zorin Hochstetter, created for a modality of laying of the hands healing that has specific protocol that basically is reminding our bodies, reminding our immune systems that we know what our health is. It focuses on health, whereas a lot of our modern day conventional, oftentimes Western systems of medicine, pharmacology, all sorts of things focus on the disease, focus on illness, focus on the problem. We look at health, you know, what is the health of the person? You know, why is the person not experiencing health in the ways that they, in their own pretty much prototype as an individual, can experience? I'm not concerned about your story. I'm not concerned about the attachments you have to whatever you have that, again, create the dis-ease. I'm concerned with your health and what I, as the conduit, the tool, am doing as the, you know, the potential that the current of energy is flowing through me. I am reminding your body on all levels of what health looks like and that it knows what that health looks like, and that it is able to bring itself back into health. You know, I don't heal you. No healer heals a person. The body, you heal yourself. The healer is really just there to hold space for the healing to occur. The healer is there to provide a reflection of the vibration that your body needs to come to in order to, again, snap itself back into what it knows as health, really.
I like the idea of snap. It's like, feels like this, it's like a vibrational kind of like wave that like ricochets off when someone can be out of alignment. So it's a way, I feel like this almost feels like instantaneous when it happens. And I'm so curious if in the practice, is it something that occurs over a period of time? And I mean, just like time in this kind of sense of just, like multiple sessions or multiple, multiple times of interaction with this, or does it literally like after the first session, you can immediately feel kind of that snap?
I think it's all of the above. So basically, and kind of going back to, so, you know, the bioenergy is this life energy. The pure bioenergy is a brand that my teacher created, and the pure aspect of it is for him key, because what he has seen, and I can understand this with the way that oftentimes healing is approached, is people tend to add their own thing into it. They bring in their own drama, their own ideas and beliefs, their own everything else that is not necessary in healing. The energy knows what it needs to do. Our bodies know what it needs to do. And they just need the reminders. And anything superfluous, anything that is ego-based, anything that is redundant, which nature, existence, life is not redundant. Nothing in life is redundant. Life does what it does. It is effective. It is precise. It doesn't make mistakes. We as human beings, because we have our egos, we like to put all sorts of things into it. We like to be redundant. We think we know better. So we end up muddling the waters. We end up muddying the energy because of our egos. So the pure aspect of it is what he oftentimes really emphasizes. And in that sense, you know, creating specific protocol that we follow as students, you know, it starts off with a certain amount of time placing the hands on different parts of the body, using specific protocol for specific concerns that people may come in with, if they come in with something specific. And if they don't, then there's kind of general protocol for kind of a wellness treatment. But basically the way I was taught is we do the treatment over 4 consecutive days to really have that repetition within the body so that the body becomes used to that specific protocol. It's like, you know, if you jog its memory enough times and it really locks in that information, whether or not someone can feel or experience something in the first day, wonderful. Second day, great. Third day, awesome. Fourth day, hey, wonderful. Sometimes it takes time, depending on how long a specific condition or the lack of health has existed, that may lend itself to potentially someone needing to come back. It's really, I just say, look, have no expectations. You came for a reason. Your body, your soul is looking for something different. It knows that it needs to heal, needs to return to its health. And that's all that we know at this point. The rest of it is just getting out of the way and letting it do what it does in the way that it does within the time frame that it does. I just stick to my format because it kind of grounds the energy. Past that, the body will do what it needs to do.
And that in itself, I think, is like such a key piece of, like, I'd like to say, like, wholing work. Because the big thing for me in like the healing industry, I'll say healing as an industry, but I'll just say the wellness movement, either or, is I find myself being reactive or being triggered by the additions that need to happen. Like, one must buy this, or one must have this, or one needs to like fix, the idea of needing to constantly fix this in order to arrive at a place, whatever that place may be, of healing. And I find it so interesting because it almost hijacks the wisdom and natural just ability for the body to do what it needs to do. And I've really, for myself, just wanted to lean into that more of noticing that, you know, as people that I feel like don't have ill intent and are wanting to do good work. And also if a story or someone else's stuff or the, again, continuation of needing to fix something. I think that then inherently implies that something's already wrong or broken. And I think I from a deep place just don't see that as my truth, or the truth with a capital T. I just really think that there's so much in this world that is whole as it is. And it's just being able to see everyone and all things in all their parts. Like, we all have parts of ourselves, you know, and they all show up in so many, you know, different ways. And I want to go back a little bit to the Wheel of Fortune card and just the more of the symbolism. And it's interesting as we talk a little bit about this. So, you know, in the corners of the card are the fixed signs of the zodiac. We have the angel as Aquarius. We have the eagle as a Scorpio. We have the lion as the Leo, and the bull is Taurus. And so these fixed signs, again, also have these like elemental energies as well. And it's just this idea, I think, this circle of kind of trusting all the facets of who we are and trusting these kind of archetypal energies. I really feel like the wheel of Fortune represents an archetypal like way of being, and the symbolism does as well, just as a graphic symbolism. I also think, you know, on the wheel of itself, there are like four letters. They're in Hebrew. And they're really just the letters of kind of God, the unpronounceable name of God. And these, the middle wheel contains, again, elemental symbols, that are used in alchemy. So mercury, sulfur, water, salt, and just these blocks of life and these elemental blocks of life. And I just keep the very like last part to me, which feels representational of just being able to notice that in times of kind of our stirrings or our chaos, we're arriving at a place that we then are coming into a deeper sense of purpose or light. Is, you know, on the outer circle, there's a snake, and you have the Egyptian god, the god of Ebel, on the left side. And then on the right side, you have Anubis, which is the god of the dead. So you have these ideas of, and then on the top is the Sphinx. So you have all of these representational parts of life also in the wheel. And I just, again, going back to just the experience that we've been talking about, and just of just the existence of humans, how energy comes through and comes through us, is this conversation or this question about how we navigate our energy. And you mentioned this question, which is why I'm bringing it up to kind of circle it back, is how do we distinguish, and I loved this question, which is why I'm excited to ask it to you. How do we distinguish our excitement versus anxiety? And then for me, it like speaks to like my experience of how our perception or our lens of our reality. And again, I think this also by reality could also mean our story. How does that really unpack our reality? So the first layer of the question is in excitement versus anxiety, because I think in a world, an energy, and really information-saturated centric world we're living in, how the messages that we get or we receive, how we get to choose or notice the choice between excitement versus anxiety.
No, definitely, definitely. And kind of looking back on my childhood, and it's kind of twofold. I think on the one hand, there were experiences in my life that I allowed to lessen or deaden my excitement. So I came from this more stoic and serious place. And as I've grown into my adulthood and continue to grow into my adulthood, just really going back to my excitement, what truly excites me, and understanding what that is and exploring all the facets of that. So that's on the one hand. And on the other hand, there is what I've realized, a part of me that my excitement doesn't look like the person jumping around with my hair on fire. Like, one, I don't have hair, so it's not going to be on fire. And two, it just doesn't look like that. And I remember in the past, people would say things in expressing kind of a volatile situation that they were having. And because I didn't react from this place of like, oh my God, and how could this happen? They were a little bit unnerved by that because they wanted me to latch onto their own quote excitement or anxiety, really, and how that created some doubt in me. Like, what's wrong with me? Why did I not react the way that I quote should have reacted, how most people would react, but I kind of had a more neutral stance. And kind of fast forward to more recent times for me, you know, this idea of excitement versus anxiety is something that I started looking at more so after listening to actually this man named Daryl Anka, who channels this entity called Bashar, and his transmissions go deeply into this idea of following your excitement, following your passion as much as you can, taking it as far as it can go. And oftentimes the questions that people have is, well, how do I distinguish my excitement from my anxiety? And he always responds, you don't know what the difference is. And a lot of people, I find that that's the case, because for me, it seems like it's the same energy, almost like two sides of the same coin. So they kind of vibrate at the same frequency. But what I think I've recognized, and, you know, he talks about this too, saying that oftentimes people vacillate back and forth between their anxiety and their excitement so quickly that they can confuse the two. And in really thinking about that and understanding for me what that is excitement, that frequency that can be either excitement or anxiety, it's excitement when it raises your vibration, when it energizes you, when it brings you peace and balance. And that can look different for different people. Some people can have more of a like an animated way of being when they're in their balance and their peace. And some people can just have a more serene, more peaceful experience of that. But if you're in a state of joy, invigoration, just energy, when just every part of you is lit up from a true and authentic place, that's excitement. And anxiety is that vibration. That's a similar vibration, but on the kind of the negative polarity, it lowers your vibration. It depletes you, depletes your energy. Oftentimes, if not always, it includes fear, or really an attachment to the fear, because something that excites you can perhaps stir up feelings of fear, and attaching to that fear then can switch it to anxiety. But recognizing that the fear is there and really pushing through the fear and really learning from the fear and learning what the fear is triggering, that can still kind of keep you in the excited state. But anxiety to me is what it is. It dims you. It negates you, negates who you are. It depletes you. And I find that oftentimes in our society, we're so accustomed to being in a place of anxiety, or even valuing anxiety, and mistaking it for true excitement. I don't know how many people truly walk around in their actual authentic excitement. I think a lot of people walk around anxiety ridden, but they imagine they're excited, and all of this anxiety is like ping ponging back and forth amongst everyone. Hence, we have all these anti-anxiety, you know, pharmaceutical things. And so,
and it's such an interesting like thing, because I as I've gotten, and whatever this means by saying this, is I've gotten, you know, I'm older, whatever. I've experienced more life because I've actually been on Earth longer. I've noticed that there was this moment or this time of like naivety or innocence, of like excitement, but like boundaryless. And it's so funny, I go back and forth with the word boundary and what it means, but discernment. And so it was boundless. And so from, I don't know, I'm going to say like 16 to 19, probably pretty strong, I was like nomadic. I like fluttered around the country. I was really into seeing music. And it was like a way of life because of the sheer, a little bit of adrenaline, but the new kind of excitement of not needing to, one, be responsible, two, needing to know like what's next. Like I was comfortable knowing that what's next was what was literally next, like my next thing forward. And being a visionary, I'd like to, you know, identify myself as one. My visions were so short. They were just like this, the next step was the next vision. And then noticing that, I've now, as I kind of reached an interesting kind of, I don't want to know if it's like, I would call it spiritual crisis or spiritual catalyst, but I had some pretty intense psychedelic trauma that kind of catapulted me further, but at like exponential rates, where like then now excitement is no longer excitement. It is it felt so deeply from a place of anxiety. And then that kind of exploration has been from, you know, now, and I'm 30. I'm about to be 31 in December. So I'm noticing that I have a tendency to anxiety overexcitement. And that's, I guess, where my second question or my curiosity comes around of like, a lot of it for me, and this is what I'm also noticing as I'm talking this through, is the difference between excitement, anxiety, and then the sensitivity of the world around us. Because for me, I'm noticing that some of my anxiety comes from my sensitivity to just energy. And I'm noticing, and I'm still finding the tools and the resources to really create containers that are safe for me first and foremost, and then I can share in a way that feels really beautiful and joyous, and I don't feel like from a place of anxiety. And so I'm curious from that of, because I know a lot of folks that I think work with energy or connected to energy that are, I would say, and again, I'll use like the terminology of like more introverted than they are extroverted. And then I'm curious of also the magnetic qualities of folks that I know that also really kind of thrive in the company of others and kind of can magnify that, which I think in a way I can do as well. Like I can allow myself to be in a room and I can sense the presencing of a room and the qualities that I can emanate to then make the room kind of light up. Like I honor that as a gift that I know that I hold. That's a lot of like kind of me talking it through, but I'm curious, like through the questioning of that, of what or how can someone arrive, and this might be a practice or just in your own personal practice, how can one arrive in a space or situation or an environment and then allow or give themselves space to notice when it's different? And I think the first part, of course, is just noticing. So I think it's maybe after the act of just simply noticing where they're coming from. I'm wondering if you could speak to that, just the differences of how, or a practice that you might use, or a way of you might, whether it's into a social space or whether it's just in the world in general. I know a lot there.
Yeah. And I'm thinking all the, you know, you said a lot, so like different things like ping, ping, ping in my mind. And, you know, you mentioned sensitivity, and I don't know if for you the sensitivity is in literally feeling, seeing, tracking, knowing the movements of energy and just that being what it is, or if the sensitivity is something happens, you feel, you see it, and it goes through you and almost like overwhelms you because you've attached to something in the experiencing of that energy. And it reminded me of a friend of mine who called me, and she's very sensitive, and she's like, girl, a person could sneeze 10 miles away and I'll feel it. Like, so she's like, how do I, she's like, and she called me to ask, you know, how do I not feel so much? How do I, because it's so overwhelming to me. And for me, what came to me to tell her, because I know I struggled with this it's a challenge and it's work for me to do as well, because I can feel energy. I can walk into a space one moment and be one emotion or just be neutral and balanced. And then the next moment, all of a sudden I feel this anger or sadness and I'm like, oh my God, I'm sad. And I think that the key is really not attaching to the energy or the emotions that you feel. It's literally letting them flow through you and pass through you. The moment they get stuck in you, you've attached to them. The moment they get stuck into you, they have alerted you that there perhaps is something within you that you're still attaching to. There's a belief, there's an idea, an experience that hasn't been transformed, transmuted, integrated, that the energy is now hooked into. So I think maybe that kind of answers the question in terms of, you know, how can you distinguish between the two, or when you're in social circumstances, how do you know? I think it's being grounded one, just in general, in that environment that you go to, you know, you arrive somewhere, get grounded, kind of determine, okay, what your homeostasis is, who are you in that moment, know who you are before even going into that space, so that when you are in that space, everything else that wasn't what you knew yourself to be before you got there is not you. As soon as you take on something else, or as soon as you switch into a different energy, it's, you know, I think what most people do is, oh my God, now I'm feeling this, and they immediately identify with it versus, okay, I'm seeing this, I'm feeling this. It's not me. It wasn't me before I got here. Therefore, I know it's not me. And I think the grounding in that space is necessary, but it speaks to a larger grounding of knowing who you are. That's the ultimate grounding. You know, I think people are so not grounded in who they are because they've attached to so many ideas of who they should be, what they should be, what they should be doing. So it's so easy. Like, no wonder we're all walking around like anxiety ridden, or, you know, for many of the empaths, just like taking on so much stuff and like, oh my God, I got to clean myself all the time or protect myself. Well, part of that likely is because we haven't fully grounded ourselves in who we are. We haven't transformed. We haven't peeled away some of those layers. And so everything that we're sensing, which is around us, but that we're taking on, it's because it's latching into or latching onto something that still is unresolved within ourselves. And what we end up doing is collapsing into that, which is, you know, one route to go. And there's lessons, and there is the beauty of that. And we come through that experience as whatever we need to be on the other side. And then there's the other side of, okay, this thing hooked me, I'm feeling this thing, rather than immediately attaching into it, immediately spiraling down into the whatever it is I spiral into. How can I use this as a tool? What is this alerting me to in my own self that needs to be cleared? Because once I clear it, next time I can feel that same thing and boop, just goes through me. I saw it. Okay, there's anger. Went through me. I'm not angry, but I just noticed that there's anger. Now that I know I haven't identified with it because that's not a part of me, or it's not latching into something, some anger that I haven't processed myself, I can now either just let it pass through me because it's not my responsibility to be a healing force for wherever that anger is coming from. Just let it pass through me. Or, okay, it's passing through me. Passed through me again, felt it again. I know it's not mine, but it keeps coming back to me. Perhaps there's something, perhaps it needs me to hold space for it somehow, somewhere. Okay, let me now be alert to finding where the source of that anger is, and let me see how I can be a resource to that person, not taking on their anger, but seeing their anger and saying, hey, I'm getting something from you. I'm seeing that there's some anger. Is there something that I can help you with?
Yeah. And noticing how that, and that pure, the witnessing and the noticing, I think, is huge, because it then allows us to be outside of the energy in which we're perceiving, is that ability to just witness and be present to. And so thank you for that. I, for me, the practice of, I connect to just these ways of knowing in myself when arriving to a place, and it's still a practice and it still takes the time, but I check in with my physical sensation in a grounding of some way. I check into my like emotional or feeling sensation, which could just be like the way I'm feeling. I check into my heart, because I actually think there's a little bit of a differentiation of like my heart-centered perception and my feeling. And then I check in, and within the heart, I think, honest, for me, exists like metaphor and dream images and other things that might be percolating in my world at that time. And then I explore my environment, like the world around me. And that, for me, has been a really important practice to root myself in those ways of knowing, and then by connecting to that, moving into the space.
It's holistic. It's a holistic approach. Everything within you, everything around you. And I think, again, that to me, that's the spirituality, you know, that's checking in with yourself, looking at the environment. Okay, I'm feeling this thing. Okay, I need to check in to see what that is. And I love that you said, you know, the distinction between the feelings and the heart. You know, the word that comes to me, and I wrote about this too, is feelings versus emotions. You know, the authentic, you know, the energy in motion, because the energy is the energy and it comes through and it comes up. And so it's a real experience. Now, how that energy came to be may be based on feelings that we have, which oftentimes our feelings are our beliefs and ideas and just a lot of mind activity. So just, yeah, like you said, understanding the differences between feelings and authentic emotion is really key. And I think we jumble them together, or we just make them synonymous. And one of the exercises that came to me through a teacher that I had years ago that I had shared with others was, you know, when you say, I feel this, let's make sure, okay, is this an actual emotion you're describing? Or replace it with, I believe this, I have an idea that this, I imagine this. And oftentimes we'll see that the things that we call our emotions, that are feelings, are actually beliefs and ideas that we have. And once we're able to really identify those, and we can start peeling away what those beliefs are, getting down to the core belief. And once we get down to the core belief, oftentimes we find that it actually does not make sense, and therefore it disappears, really.
In this conversation, again, I think with the wheel, and just the kind of, as we slowly come to a close and talking about the wheel, is I think so much of this card, and maybe what can be a source of opportunity or growth for folks, is that it's really the cycle of external factors outside of you are always at work. And it's the ability, I think, to notice and to mitigate and to navigate those factors, because what will happen, and it's that choice to notice. You know, what will come again. And I have this quote that was moving me before we close with a song. I really like Rilke. He's a pretty, he's an interesting poet, has an interesting lifespan, but this is from Rilke, and it's Rainer Maria Rilke, which forever I thought was a female, but they talk a lot, and they have these poems called the Sonnet to Orpheus, and he spent a lot of time writing to the, and I feel like was being paid to being to write poetry for the elite, and then recognized how fleeting or that wasn't his work, and he kind of then like isolates himself in this tower and writes his life away in a way. So he has both this like really beautiful story and also just like an interesting back history. And so this is called the Sonnets to Orpheus, and there's 26 sonnets, but this is sonnet number 12. And it says, "Oh, greet that spirit who can unify us, for we truly live in metaphors. And with small steps go the hours along the day as we really live it. Having no true bearings, we somehow act as if we had. The aerial feels the antenna and broads on the vast, empty distance. Pure intensity, oh, music of energies, is not every obstacle turned aside by you in small, venial transactions? If the farmer worries themselves with the question of how the sown grain transforms itself in the summer, he will get nowhere. The earth gives forth." And I just felt, just so interesting that life will continue to happen to us or through us. And it's just, you know, how we experience that really, you know, has our path and orchestrates that. So, Onya, if you feel comfortable, one, sharing if you have anything coming through, in terms of things in LA for any listeners that are living in LA, and how people can find more about your work that you're doing, and maybe a closing song if that feels right.
No, definitely. And I'm so all over the place right now. in terms of where I will be. So I'll be traveling over the next month or so. So I don't have any events coming up immediately in LA, but if people are interested in knowing when and where I will be, I'm pretty active on social media, primarily Instagram, and my handle is at onyi.love. And I'm also on Facebook as well, onyilove1, and I'm in the process of building out my website, so that should be coming out pretty soon, and that will be www.onyi.love. So I will be sharing where I will be, the things that I'm doing. I'm recording an album right now, so that look for that in the near future, some more music from me. And I think, you know, one of the things, you know, in considering destiny, and one of the questions that had come up, which is, how do we navigate our destiny? How does destiny navigate us? I think how we navigate our destiny is just by surrendering to it, because we created it. So just surrendering to ourselves, trust, remember that we chose it, and that ultimately, whatever lessons that we came here to learn, we will learn them in some way, shape, or form. So rather than resist the lessons, because they'll still find us, just surrender to them. And destiny navigates us by surrendering to us. Destiny knows what it needs to do and what it came to do, and it surrenders to the choices that we make in our free will. So it's really the dual surrendering of us to destiny and destiny to us, and that synergy between the two, really.
Support for The Witch's Muse can be found through Patreon/The Witch's Muse. Have an opportunity to dive into extended content, guided visualizations, monthly question and answers, and a look behind what it takes to make The Witch's Muse. Any tier is welcome, from your cup of compassion all the way to your creatrix community. So find something for yourself or for a friend. Look forward to seeing you on there. Patreon.com/The Witch's Muse. If you like what you hear, please go ahead, subscribe, rate, and review to The Witch's Muse, and make sure to tell your friends. Thanks so much. Have an awesome, awesome day.